Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. Welcome to Cult Talks Conspiracy.
Before we unseal this file, we wanted to fill you in on some really exciting news.
For as little as $3 a month, you can be a part of our pursuit to hashtag question everything by clicking the support the show link found in the show notes of each episode.
Your support would mean the absolute world to us and help us dive deeper into the mind-blowing conspiracies you, Ty, and I all love.
Thank you for joining us, seeking the truth, and as always, question everything.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
File access granted.
Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, all those question the world around you. I'm Ty.
And I'm Bailey.
And this is Cult Talks Conspiracy. File 014. 14 of these we've done so far, 14. Including all the encounters.
14. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And we have all those encounters we've done.
I know. I just can't believe we're already at like almost the end of the first quarter of the year. Like this is crazy. It's nuts.
We are barreling through it.
I know. It's going faster and faster. This must be what they talk about with adulthood, where time starts going faster.
Everything moves so fast. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe it either. It's wild how far we are in the year already. Mm-hmm. So last time, Bailey took us on Bailey did encounters for parallel universes.
Yes.
Different people experiencing mm-hmm. weird glitches in reality.
Yeah.
And maybe seeing another universe. That was a really fun one.
That was cool. Those stories are always so fun because it's like, I love to wrap my brain around the how and why of things and how they work. So, you know, and also like, I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac, so there are times where I'm like, wait a minute, did I just step out of this universe and I'm like in this story now? So it feeds both sides of my brain on that.
Well, today we're not talking about universes. We're going to talk about another like big brain thing that we got on. No white supremacists in this one, luckily.
Yay!
Yeah, that was a nice refreshing take. I've been on a streak of white supermassist list.
You really have.
So trying to keep that up.
I think you're on a list now.
It drags it down. Oh, God. Don't be surprised. It's awful. It really drags down a story when you have to delve into that shit every time. But I've done pretty good about seeking out ones that don't cross into that world. So
that's very good. That's good.
Yeah. So we're doing today gray goo.
I'm so excited.
What do you think gray goo is, Bailey?
So when you first told me about it, my original thought was flubber. But then, I actually looked into it, and it's more like the blob.
That's a good one.
Super cool. Like I'm super excited. I cannot wait.
Yeah. So this is a cool one. I found this out on the Conspiracy Theory Iceberg, which is where I go to a lot and poke around trying to find stuff for the show. So I found this one. It's already on the bottom tier of the iceberg. So it was a deep one, and I had to look over different places to find all the information for this, because it's kind of spread out throughout different places online. So I had to do a little bit of digging for the research I was able to do on this, but it came out pretty good. Got to talk about some stuff I've never looked into, so that was cool to learn a little something new, which it's always the best part about these episodes, getting to find out some new information and expand your mind a little bit while hearing about this weird conspiracy.
Absolutely. We love to learn over here, guys. We love it.
So I think without further ado, I think it's time. You know, I don't want to harp on too much. I want to go ahead and get into it here.
I'm excited. Let's do it.
Let's go ahead and let's unseal this case file, file 014. Let's find out what is gray goo. So you said you looked in a little bit to this about the idea of gray goo. How far did you go down the rabbit hole on it?
Oh, I limited myself to about 15 minutes. So I had the alarm set, and I found out like it's actually like I was surprised at how much history there is behind it. And it's like, it's coined and, you know, cause I mean, me and my mom, I didn't take it seriously. So of course, when I find out, it's like always like, oh man, like cool. So, but that's always part of the journey. I love, oh man, I'm so excited. I did not see nanotech coming in.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to do here starting off. Is we're going to learn a little bit about nanotechnology. It's kind of like to build the groundwork for a dive into things, let people kind of get caught up with what we're going to be looking at. So we are going to be talking about nanotechnology. It's one of those real-life technological advancements that just sounds like some made-up concept straight out of like a sci-fi movie. When you start hearing about nanotechnology, it just sounds like something out of like Star Trek or some Ridley Scott movie or something. Yep. Like it doesn't register as something that's actually a thing that is pretty commonly used nowadays. While researching things, I kept coming across terms that until I came across them, I thought were just made up terms from like Marvel movies. Oh, you know, shit. Like quantum realm. I thought quantum realm was just a concept to string together Ant-Man movies. But no, the quantum realm is an actual thing. It's actually the fundamental physical theory used to describe natural properties at a subatomic level. So basically, it is what, for most part, if you've ever seen an Ant-Man movie where they go to the quantum realm, it's this world at a quantum level, and that's basically what the quantum realm is. Like it's a universe that's smaller than ours,
huh?
But it is a whole ecosystem, and everything is, you know, there's a way of life there, and it's just very small, minute atomic level stuff. There is, you know, things interacting with each other. There's environment.
That's amazing.
And it's just a subatomic level.
I love it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was just a made up thing from Marvel movies, but no, the quantum realm is an actual location or an actual environment that scientists have found while researching nanotechnology.
Oh my gosh! So is it like? Oh man, this is me really Barney styling it down, guys. But is it like people really can live inside a snowflake, or am I going too far there?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. I mean, imagine there not so much people, but I mean, inside of a snowflake, I assume there's organisms interacting and things like that, just like there would be anywhere else. So I imagine there is like a world within something like that.
Interesting.
You know, probably very short lifespan, and things move a lot more fast and rapidly than out here. But I don't know. Maybe we're in a snowflake. Never know.
Oh my god. We must be in Antarctica then.
maybe. I always like in those movies where they'll like expand out, and it, like in Men in Black, where it expands out and the whole universe in a marble. Like I like that kind of shit. That's always fun when people do that. But no, I don't know. I don't know if we go that deep, or you know, there's civilizations living in snowflakes, but there is a subatomic or like a natural property to the subatomic level. There is an ecosystem and an environment of sorts.
Nice.
And that is the quantum realm.
Very nice.
So nanotech is defined by the National Nanotechnology Initiative, and we'll talk a little bit about them here later. They describe nanotechnology as a base description. It is the manipulation of matter with at least one dimension size from 1 to 100 nanometers. So it's the manipulation of matter at a nanometric size. So between 1 and 100 nanometers, that is considered nanotechnology when you're manipulating matter at that level. And if you know what a nanometer is, it's minute. I mean, it's not something you can measure with your finger or something like that. It's pretty small. So that's what nanotechnology is at a base described by the nanotechnology, the National Nanotechnology Initiative. Like I said, we'll talk a little about them here later.
Yeah.
Now, nanotechnologies is a term with a broad range for applications. That's main trait is size. So nanotechnology, it stretches across all different fields, energy storage, physics, biology, engineering. All these different big brain scientific fields utilize nanotechnology in some form. The only relative thing to it is that it's at a minute nanometric size.
Mm-hmm.
So it's used everywhere. Nobel Prize winning physicist Richard Phillips Feynman is credited for introducing the concept of nanotechnology when he discussed direct manipulation of atoms in his 1959 lecture, which is titled "There's Plenty of Room at the Bottom: An Invitation to Enter a New Field of Physics." At the time, however, this concept would go largely unnoticed. He did this, and it wouldn't be till decades later that people started to go back and check this lecture out, and that's where the kind of the base origin of nanotechnology started to sprout from, because no one had really considered the possibility of manipulating atoms at that point.
Interesting. So,
right. I mean, it's something that no one had considered, and he introduced it, and it went dormant for like 20 years or so before people finally started to look back and look on this lecture and get the idea of nanotechnology.
Isn't that so crazy? Like things like we literally, oh my gosh, like it's very, very crazy the way that it's lining up. But yeah, atoms are something that like we use in everyday science. Like, I mean, they're,
yeah,
like,
we're surrounded by atoms.
Yeah. So I mean, to think
atomic on some level,
I mean, to think that, you know, not so long ago that, you know, it wasn't really something that was being considered to, you know, investigate and to study and whatnot.
Right.
It's very, very bizarre. Very happy that we did it, but very interesting as well.
Yeah. But as some might say, Richard Philip Feynman walked so K. Eric Drexler could run. Kim Eric Drexler first began to study Feynman's lecture in 1979 while researching a concept he had coined, molecular nanotechnology. Now, although Drexler was not the originator of the term nanotechnology, this was by Professor Norio Taniguchi in 1974. However, he was referring to the manufacturing of materials with nanometric tolerances. So this guy came up with the word nanotechnology, but he wasn't even referring to what nanotechnology is now commonplace with. So that's why, as far as nanotechnology goes, Drexler is considered the pioneer of that term in the way it's used now. So Taniguchi was coming up with some different concept and used it, but it was popularized by Drexler.
Gotcha.
Now, in 1986, Drexler published his book, Engines of Creation, The Coming Era of Nanotechnology. And it was here that he would introduce assemblers. These nanoscaled builders would be able to theoretically replicate themselves and other objects despite their complexity as long as they had adequate raw materials at their disposal. Now, again, this was just a theoretical concept he came up with. It wasn't like he designed them or made them. He was just proposing that eventually nanotechnology could get to the point where we are able to create these assemblers. Now, that was in 1986. And the 1980s were actually a defining era for nanotechnology as it became a popular mainstream concept. And you would see it getting used in things like sci-fi movies at this point. It was wide enough a concept where people were taking the idea and running with it and, you know, utilizing different things.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the main things I remember seeing nanotechnology in was Jason X. Have you ever seen that one?
I don't believe so. No, I haven't seen Jason in Space yet. No.
Oh, okay. That's where I remember that being one of the first times I seen nanotechnology in a movie and thinking it was really cool. And you know, it was in a Jason movie. All counts. But in there, like they have a machine where like a guy gets his arm cut off and they put him in this machine, and these nanobots, which act a lot like assemblers would, are able to make his arm, they bring his arm back. You know, they recreate his arm.
Right, yes. Did they freeze him out of ice in that one?
Jason? Yeah.
Yeah. I have seen this. I have seen this. I pulled this out. Yeah, briefly remember that. But yeah, that brought that back. Oh, that's weird. I never associated that with being nanotechnology.
That's the one. When I think of nanotechnology, that's the first movie I think of is that one. And then also, like, the nanobots also make him into Uber Jason at the end. Make him into, like, the Super Jason.
Yeah.
When he falls into the machine. Now, as the 1980s went on, nanotechnology became more popular. And there were two major breakthroughs that greatly advanced the field. And we'll touch on those briefly, but we're not going to get too much into them because they don't really I don't need to for this gotcha. this story. So the main one is a thing called the scanning tunneling microscope. Now this was invented in 1981, and this actually allowed for microscopic visualization of individual atoms. So using this microscope, you could actually observe a single atom. It was so powerful. You could actually get on that level.
Oh, that's ooh.
And then there was a discovery of a molecule made up of carbon atoms called fullerene. Now, this made it good because you could use this molecule to actually make things at a microscopic level. It was carbon-based.
Mm-hmm.
So these discoveries in hand with Drexler, who at this time had co-founded the Foresight Institute. Now, the Foresight Institute was a foundation that its sole purpose was to spread public awareness about nanotechnology. So its whole goal was just to make sure that everyone was educated and understood what nanotechnology could be used for, how it worked, and get people interested so they could advance research. Because, you know, they need to get people interested to begin researching this concept right. So they can move forward in it.
Right. You'd want more people researching it. The more minds on it, the better.
Yeah, the more people you can get thinking this is a really good concept, the more people that will utilize their time to research it, and that creates new advancements. Now, in the 90s, as interest and development continued to grow, an initiative was proposed in 1999 to the White House, known as the National Nanotechnology Initiative. The purpose of this was to regulate resources and research of nanotechnology among the various United States government agencies and departments. So basically, this initiative did was they took all of the research that we had done in nanotechnology, and they basically divvied it up to agriculture or war or all the different agencies. They made sure it had a little bit of nanotechnology integrated right. with them, and they optioned out who got more, who got less. Now, the purpose of this was to regulate the resources because, as with everything, there needs to be regulation. And we'll get into why that is. You know, as much as regulation is kind of looked at as this like negative thing, you'll find that when it comes to nanotechnology, there's actually a pretty good need for it because of how powerful this stuff can be. So one of the main concerns behind the regulation was the possible impact that nanotechnology could have on human health and the environment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, something that small. I mean, how do you even begin to control something that small? It's kind of like when you have the same right. argument of something that big. Those are good concerns.
Yeah. So there would actually be a new form of study that would be introduced around this time too, and it is called nanotoxicity. Now, one of the main reasons for the call of the government regulations was people's health and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So nanotoxicity is actually the study of how the materials and the manufacturing of nanotechnology would affect those two, you know, if it would cause human harm or if it would cause irreversible harm to the environment. So that's the whole point of this field of study was to regulate that stuff. Now, there was actually two pretty good impacts they actually discovered while doing these tests.
Mm-hmm.
One impact of concern was discovered in the use of a nanoparticle called bacteriostatic. Now, this is used in socks to reduce foot odor. It's actually built into the material used for socks, and it will reduce foot odor as it's worn. Its whole thing is it devours like bacteria.
Huh.
That's the whole purpose of this nanoparticle. Now, what they found is that this nanoparticle was actually being released while you were washing your socks. You'd throw your socks in the washer, and this nanoparticle would get released into the water, and it would get washed out with the wastewater. So then this nanoparticle would accumulate in the wastewater
mm-hmm.
and get spilled out into whatever location your wastewater gets emptied out in, and it would actually then turn and attack bacteria that's vital to the ecosystem.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That was one of the things they found in it. So that was the environmental impact that they were concerned about.
Oh, man.
Now, UCLA, they have a School of Public Health. Now, they actually did research for 2 years on the impact of nanoparticles and nanofibers. Now, these are some of the main things used when constructing nanotech. It's a very thin fabric called nanofiber, mm-hmm. and the actual nanoparticles used to create the nanotech. So what they found was that in inhaling these particles, it was actually linked to cancer, heart disease, and also various neurological diseases.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, these two components, nanoparticles and nanofibers, were directly linked to these. These are like the big human killers. This is what people die from on a regular basis. Cancer, heart disease.
Yeah.
Neurological diseases.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got your top four right there. Literally, the biggest ones, go on. The tinfoil hat is on.
Now, but one of the most terrifying concerns from the use of nanotechnology comes from an idea proposed by nanotech pioneer K. Eric Drexler. In his 1986 book we talked about earlier, we mentioned his concept of the assemblers. And this is the root of what is known as gray goo. Now, obviously, here on Cult Talk Conspiracy, mm-hmm. we talk a lot about conspiracies, obviously. But gray goo isn't commonly referred to as a conspiracy. What it's referred to is as a nightmare scenario. Or a world killer is what these are described, is what most people use to associate with gray goo.
Interesting. Really, really quick, can you tell me what the name of the book was one more time?
Yeah, it is Engines of Creation, The Coming Era of Nanotechnology.
Awesome. Gonna add that to my reading list.
In chapter 11 of his book, he talks about these assemblers, and he says, early assembler-based replicators beat the most advanced modern organisms. Plants with leaves, no more efficient than today's solar cells, could outcompete real plants, crowding the biosphere with an inedible foliage. Tough, omnivorous bacteria could outcompete real bacteria. They could spread like blowing pollen, replicate swiftly, and reduce the biosphere to dust in a matter of days. Dangerous replicators could easily be too tough, small, and rapidly spreading to stop, at least if we made no preparation. We have trouble enough controlling viruses and even fruit flies. So he's saying these replicators, they would be, if they were let out of hand, they would be basically impossible to stop. So as long as these assemblers had sufficient raw materials at their disposal, they could continuously self-replicate. Now, the term gray goo, we'll explain what that is, because gray goo isn't referring to the color or the consistency of this stuff. Basically, gray goo is what he uses to highlight the superiority of this matter. It's a completely competitive matter. It doesn't have emotions, feelings. All it is it's just vying to be the only thing left.
Yeah.
So, in his book, he says about that, through masses of uncontrolled replicators need not be gray or gooey. The term gray goo emphasizes that replicators able to obliterate life might be less inspiring than a single species of crabgrass. They might be superior in an evolutionary sense, but this need not make them valuable. These things have no value to us. It could be a replicator that has decided to replicate crabgrass over and over and over and over and over, and it would destroy Earth because it would constantly be consuming all the raw material, be consuming all organic life. So it wouldn't even be like it's replicating a monster. It's just, I'm a blade of grass,
and I'm going to keep being a blade of grass, and whatever I have to consume to keep being a blade of grass, I'm going to consume.
It's literally doing what it has to do to survive and be the very last thing.
Like for no other reason than it's superior. That's the only thing. Like, it has no need to survive. It has no want to survive. It just has a task that it's just going to do endlessly until it can't anymore.
That is so crazy. Because, like, oh man, I've been watching a lot of serial killer documentaries, and like one of the things was there's nothing scarier than a killer that just kills for no reason. That's kind of the same thing here, because like it just keeps growing and keeps living. I mean, for no purpose, and it serves us no purpose as well. No. Like, it just keeps making this thing, and not even like multiples of, you know, different things, just the same thing.
Yeah, it could, because these replicators, or the assemblers, whichever way you decide to describe them, they are just doing this because that's what they're programmed to do. Like, that's, they know that as long as there's raw material at their disposal, they are going to keep replicating this object.
Mm-hmm. What happens when there's no more raw material left?
I think then they would start dying. Then I imagine the technology would dry out. He refers to it as they would start to dry out. You know, run dry like a car. Mm-hmm. You know, a car, you can run it until it runs out of gas, and it'll just die. So the only time it will die is when it's killed everything else. It'll be the last thing to die.
Oh my gosh. And they could even like consume us humans too. Like, as well as, oh wow.
Yeah, absolutely. We are organic life, so it will consume all organic life.
Oh gosh. Eek.
Now, without close regulation, the assemblers could devour and replicate all matter on Earth. The nightmare scenario could begin as simply as this. A small number of assemblers are produced in a lab. The first batch begins to consume material and creates another batch. The second batch does the same. Each generation doubles the numbers of the previous. More and more raw material is consumed. As an exponential growth, population of assemblers begin to convert any organic material to more of their own. At the rate of growth increases, Earth is reduced to nothing but a lifeless mass crawling with nanotech. That would be all it'd be. Because it would just keep consuming and growing. Each generation doubles the one previous to it.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And the fact that it can happen just as simple as, you know, an experiment in a lab. Like,
yeah, it's an experiment in a lab. Someone isn't being careful. They let an assembler out. It could be one assembler, and they can create two makes four makes eight, 16,
and it's nanotech. So I mean, it's already
super, at a microscopic level, tiny. Nanometric scale.
That's absolutely terrifying. Yeah, they phrased that correctly as nightmare scenario and not a conspiracy. Yeah,
that's basically
theory.
The best way to describe a straight up nightmare scenario. And you'd have to wonder, with it being so small, how long it would take for us to even realize what exactly was going on. You know what I mean? Like, it's and to destroy it, because you gotta imagine, as long as there's one assembler remaining, it's gonna keep doing what it's programmed to do.
Oh, shoots. So you literally have to destroy every single last one.
Oh, yeah, because it's just gonna keep doing what it's made to do. It's gonna keep assembling and replicating. So that would be basically the end of the world. Now, in a 2000 article in Wired magazine, Bill Joy, he's a computer engineer, warned of this scenario. Keep in mind, he's a computer engineer. He's a pretty smart guy. The article is titled, "Why the Future Doesn't Need Us."
I don't like now, the sound.
It's a very ominous title. So what he says is basically, he warns as we move toward increased computer power, more dependence on automation and manufacturing, and self-operating robotics, we're actually moving closer to a dystopian future where mankind's on the verge of extinction. So he kind of like describes this dystopian future that he has cooked up in his head, which I don't necessarily think is the actual way it would go, but this is the one he came up with. His future that he saw would basically be the world is in shambles. There's all these robots that are, you know, going around, and they're all controlled by like the world elite. So like the Illuminati controls them. Because everything's going to come back to the Illuminati.
Yep.
Somehow.
Yep.
So the Illuminati controls these robots, and in turn, they're able to control the population, who reproduces, who doesn't reproduce, you know, who lives, who dies, all that is the way he described it, which I don't think is the future that Drexler is warning us of, because Drexler is warning us of a future where these robots are just mindlessly replicating and just consuming. So there's no real ruler or controller. They're just doing what they do until everything's gone. There are two opposing sources to Joy's article. These are two other roboticists who had different ideas of how the future will go. Because it seems like when you start reading into things, people are pretty certain. Like, it's not even like a maybe it will happen. It's like it will happen. Like, we're, you know, robots will basically outnumber humans at a certain point. Like, it's kind of just like that's the way it's going to happen. Like, it's not if, or it's a matter of when, basically, when you start reading these articles. Like, everyone kind of has the same conclusion that we're basically building our own like destruction. So
I mean, I can see it though. Like, I really can. Like, Michael just sent me this thing the other day of like a nail robot that you stick your finger into and it makes your own design. I'm like, yeah, like I could foresee myself in like the next 2 decades like going to a nail salon where it's just like stick your hand in, pick your design, like,
right.
But I mean, so, yeah, and I mean, think about it, like, at the gas station, like, you go and there's coffee robots there, like, all those coffee machines where it's like, leave room for foam and whatnot. That's a robot barista right there.
Yep.
Alexa is a robot.
There will eventually be just, like, no real need for a lot of things. Like, no. There's a lot of jobs that, you know, easily could be replaced by automation. Like, it's pretty wild. There's a lot of things that get done on a daily basis that easily a machine to be programmed to do that.
Oh yeah, it's scary. It's scary.
It
too,
is. It really is.
You think about how many people are in our country and like how many jobs could be replaced by robots, and that's just that's tacking up on the unemployment line. Like, that's terrifying.
Right. Now, roboticist Rodney Brooks, he believed that rather than it being man versus machine at the edge of extinction, it would be man and machine combining to be one to thrive together.
Also,
so he's saying that eventually humans and robots just kind of, you know, join together. It'll be cyborgs, basically. Hmm. Which, sign me up, because I'd welcome that. I have no problem. I tell everyone's always worried about like chips in your arm and, you know, barcodes. Put one in me. It makes things so much easier.
No,
I don't care. I don't. I want, you know, mount a chip in my head where I can make phone calls and pay at the gas station. I don't care. We're getting tracked anyways.
I mean, who's in control of that chip? Like, I mean, you really think they're going to tell you everything that's wrong with that chip? Yes, it does matter.
Who's in control of everything? Who's in control of anything?
Listen,
I don't care. I'm all about convenience.
The only thing at the end of the day that still makes us free is the fact that we can still make our own choices.
I don't want to make my own choices. Just
Tyler!
I don't care. I tell people at work all the time, people are always like, oh, they're going to put chips in us. It's like, you know, put me at the front of the line. Let me get this taken care of.
You and Michael be fighting at the front of that fucking line. Like, Jesus Christ.
Will.
Oh my God, that is terrifying.
No, I don't give a shit.
No, I do.
I don't. Mount my cell phone into my eyeball.
Absolutely not.
I'll be fine with that. That'd be pretty cool. I can watch YouTube and text from my eye. It'd be good. That'd be one less thing for me to have to carry around.
Jesus. I would be fine with like eyeglasses that like also like the lenses were like futuristic and like were screens and everything. But nothing, I mean nothing, goes into my body. Like, absolutely not. Not a chip, not a barcode, not a nothing. Like, absolutely
slap,
not.
Slap a chip in me. I'll be a lot happier. Be a lot more convenient.
I just don't
trust. One last thing for me to worry about carrying around.
Jesus, I don't trust the powers that be for that. You really trust the government enough to do that to you?
No,
or a tech company to do that to you?
I don't. They're already doing enough to me. Just make it easy at least. Just make it easier. I don't
care.
I mean, we're being fed things and breathing in stuff. We don't know what they are. We're wearing material in our body that's synthetic. You know, at least make it to where if you're doing something, make it convenient. It's one last thing you have to worry about.
I mean, you got me on the convenience argument. That's for sure.
Yeah, we're already just, you know, lambs of the slaughter on a daily basis anyways.
But we can, you know,
at least dangle a carrot in front of me. Like, it's
make the run worth it.
make it worth it.
Oh man,
I'm sure we're consuming poison on a multiple times a day basis. So
I mean, that's
we're already being controlled.
I mean, you got to watch what you eat and watch where your sources and shit come from. And I mean, like, oh, this is going to put me down a rabbit hole. I ain't ready for tonight.
I tell everyone all the time at the office, I'm like, make it speed it up.
I'm happy.
Stop beating around the bush.
I'm happy you're confident in your choices.
Yeah, I'll slap a mark of the beast on me. I don't care. It's.
I'm just happy you're confident with yourself. I'm happy that it makes you happy.
Yeah.
But
if that ever does
come out, I'm locking you and Mike in a basement. That shit ain't happening. I can't have you guys detonating at any fucking moment in time or deciding to turn into like controlled zombies, or losing brain cells because the chip inside your head is like diluting your brain cells like TikTok does. But I mean, yeah, can't lose you guys to that. Sorry, gonna go in the basement for a long, long time. Cult Talk Net's gonna have endless content. It's gonna be great.
Yeah. So there's the future that Rodney Brooks believes that we'll eventually get to. Roboticist Hans Meraviz. Now, he believed that indeed robots would take over pretty much every aspect of human life. But he doesn't believe it's going to be like this war where we're fighting for our independence and, you know, waging resistance. He believes that we'll basically see that this is a lot better than doing it ourselves, and we'll just submit and be comfortable in this new future where we don't have to do anything. So basically think like WALL-E is what I imagine, you know, spaceship WALL-E.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is just fucking like, doesn't have any leg bones and shit, because we're all just like blobs.
That was terrifying. Like
that's basically what he sees the future will eventually be. It's just robots do anything for us, and we're just like, fuck it. Like, whatever.
Maybe scarred me for life.
As long as it's easy.
Maybe scarred me for life. Oh, my God. But, I mean, as a kid, that was the first time that I think ever got introduced to me that robots could, well, maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to go back through my catalog of movies I had seen by then. But, yeah, that was pretty out there in the clear that robots had taken over. Earth was pretty desolate. WALL-E was the only one like still left on the planet, and there was no more life growing.
He was a single. Yeah, he wasn't. He was just a machine. He was like the last machine on, like the last working machine on the planet. Mm-hmm. And the inhabitants of Earth return, and they're all just like blobs.
Yeah,
of people because they've developed technology so far that machines just do everything. Like we're all just carted around these machines, and they feed us, and it's like an everyday vacation basically. If we don't have anything, we have to do. So that's what he thinks will eventually happen. We'll eventually just be like, hell yeah, fuck it, you know, let's just chill. Like that's what he thinks will happen. It'll be so convenient where mankind will just be comfortable in the idea. Which again. All right, I can do that. I get behind that one.
I couldn't do it. I don't think I could do it. That's for sure. I really don't. No, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. I don't trust machines enough, though. I don't trust machines enough. Like, these things crap out on us every day. Like, my GPS literally just crapped out on me, like, 2 days ago.
Like, well, that's because you have a Samsung.
That is irrelevant to the conversation.
You got to choose what technology you subscribe yourself to. Which technology you allow to assimilate with?
I mean, the Mac still messes up here now and again. Like, I mean, let's be real.
User error.
That is not user error. That happens to all three of us, and it's happened to, you know, it's happened to everybody. Like, I mean, but the point is, like, machines go out of order all the time. So it's like, how could you? Which
usually,
I mean,
when a machine goes out of order, I mean, it's usually the human component that fails it. That's in my experience. I've done 15 years of working on various different mechanical and electronic things. It's usually when a component fails, it's the human component at fault.
Okay. You have more experience in that.
Nine times out of ten. I will say, technology does fail. Parts break. Boards wear out. Fuses blow. But nine times out of ten, when something fails, it's the human component that has caused it. That's just in my experience. But I'm perfectly fine with like the RoboCop thing where like I'm just like a head with a brain, a spine. You just plug me into a some sort of machine. And that's what I use.
Instead of just Tesla charging stations.
Do that. I'll have it. Yep. Just that's what I'm fine with. Just. I assume the worst and everything. It's technology. We're already too far gone. Just fucking let's make it convenient for me. That's all I want. I want convenience and I want an ease. And if you're gonna, you know, control my mind, make it worth my while. So that's my thought on it. But that's what Hans believed. Now Drexler, he is credited for introducing the concept of, you know, this whole thing, this gray goo nightmare. But he is very adamant that it's a very easily avoidable nightmare. Because all we have to do is just not produce assemblers.
Yeah. Like,
that's all we have to do, is we just don't build these things. So what he did was, when he introduced this into his book, is he was actually introducing kind of a cautionary tale of this thing that could happen. You know, because nanotechnology is a very powerful engineering tool. There's a lot of cool things you can do with it, but there has to be regulations and there has to be foresight. And that was a big thing with his Foresight Institute, is they were very big on, that was why they wanted to educate people on nanotechnology, is because it's one of those things that could get out of hand if not properly regulated. So the whole assemblers concept, there's no assemblers. There's no lab that has these or is working on them, because these are used simply as a cautionary tale.
Oh, wow.
Different governments have used them as a basis to research nanotechnology. UK, they do like pretty regular checks on nanotechnology production, just based on the assemblers scenario, mm-hmm. to make sure there isn't anything being developed that could lead to this.
Oh my gosh.
That's kind of the whole purpose behind the National Nanotechnology Initiative, is to regulate and make sure that things aren't being, we aren't going to, like, you know, enter ourselves into some kind of gray goo nightmare. Now, throughout the decades, since Drexler introduced this, cautionary tale, but still taken very seriously. It's considered to be pretty low probability of it actually happening, mainly because of how closely everything is regulated.
Oh.
People do consider it to be, like, it's very unlikely that it will ever occur, thanks to Drexler introducing this cautionary tale, because it did resonate with everyone who reads it. It's a very scary scenario. It's something that easily happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's considered to be they call it a low probability, high impact scenario.
Ooh.
Where it's very likely will happen, but if it ever did, it would be catastrophic.
Yeah. Oh. Mm.
But that is gray goo. That's what gray goo is.
Absolutely terrifying. Thank you for the nightmares. And the nightmare scenario.
Nightmare scenario, yeah. That's it. Nothing, it's such a true statement. It's just, it's a strip nightmare. And when you think about nanotechnology, how small it is, mm-hmm. there's no way to defeat it. Like, you could nuke whatever area this nanotechnology is, you know, spreading, but all it takes is one nanometric machine to survive,
mm-hmm.
and it just never ends.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, for lack of better words, it really, truly would be never ending. There was a trailer that I watched in preparation for it. It was in preparation for this, I mean, and it was a, like, animated, like, 2D, I think, 2D movie called Grey Goo. And it kind of showed that, the Grey Goo, like, taking over, like, the beings and the aliens and the humans and whatnot. And I'll send it to you. It was really cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool to watch.
But it was actually really cool, because the goo actually had, like, electricity, what I can describe as electricity flowing through it. Like, they had, like, these purple beams coming out of it. And, like, you know, like, little robots, alien things coming out of it as well. I say alien because, like, I'm not quite sure what it is. Nanotech bots, I guess, would be what those are.
Nanobugs.
Nanobugs. Oh, okay. Nanobugs. Yep. But I mean, it's just, it's insane. And I mean, that's kind of what was going through my head as you were describing this. And I mean, it really and truly would, you know, be something of that nature where they're just coming at you from all angles all the time. And oh man,
I'm pretty sure Michael Crichton has a book that kind of is a gray goose scenario. I'm pretty sure Michael Crichton, the guy who wrote Jurassic Park. I'm pretty sure I remember reading part of it when I was in high school, but I think he has a book that is nanotechnology getting out of hand and kind of taking over the world.
I would love that. Oh, I would
have to look into it. Yeah. I feel like I remember reading that when I was in high school or starting it when I was in high school. But
oh, fabulous. This was amazing.
But yeah, that was gray goo. I wanted to find more. There's really not that much to find on because it is one of those things where he did a really good job of introducing it and then scaring people enough to take the steps to make sure it never happens.
Yeah, it's really quite amazing that it's still used as a cautionary tale today, even being, you know, written, you know, over 40 years ago as well. Like, people are still reading this and are like, absolutely not. Like, we do not mess with this. And I mean, it's very, it's very interesting, but it really, I wonder about the one, because you know, there's always one.
What? Yeah, one guy.
There's always one guy.
Yeah.
I wonder about the one. There probably has been many ones since this has happened. I would suspect many people have probably tried.
And yeah, there's always probably someone who's like, I can do this safely.
Yeah. And then
I can make this not happen. Then,
hey, did you hear about the explosion over in the science wing not too long ago?
Yeah,
like, exactly. Yeah, that was weird.
What if it's already happening? We don't even know it. What if it's already happening somewhere?
Oh, man. Maybe that's what
I imagine when we would really figure it out. Because if it's like replicating things it touches, I don't know. It's a weird thing. I wonder if it can like reproduce like a human. That's one question I have about it. Like make a person.
That's interesting. I would be interested in finding the answer to that question as well.
Yeah.
Because then the game changes. Because then it's like, is it the same human? Is it a different human each time? Is it just the human it interacts with? Like, what?
Yeah.
What happens?
Maybe I'm nanotechnology.
Right, I don't know this.
I'd be gray goo. I'm trying to push my pro-tech propaganda. Get you guys to sign up for the chips in your arms.
It's not going to happen, buddy.
So me and the master race can take over me and my gray goo compadres.
Listen, not only me, but Frost House will not stand for it. No. We do not bend the knee. No.
I will gladly bend my, you know, mechanical titanium knee to whatever makes life more convenient for me.
Wonderful. Glad for you. Happy for you. Not my choices. No, that's absolutely freaking terrifying. And I mean, oh, it is so relevant to this day and age too, because like I literally just ended up switching. I say I'm a total hypocrite, everyone, just so you guys know, because I say this as I am merging all of my work stuff from paper to my computers and to my phones and everything. So I'm 100% a hypocrite, and it's totally for convenience, because like I'm traveling all the time and I'm having to work all the time. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to, you know, carry all this stuff. And I mean, it's heavy. And then
up on your phone.
Oh my God, it's not okay. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna get all my binders back out now. This is bad. I just convinced myself I don't need a paper planner, that I have my phone that I already pay for that has a calendar in it, and now I'm gonna go out and buy a planner.
Calendar has reminders, has everything in it.
Yeah, but it's a freaking piece of technology.
Embed that sucker to the back of my head. Do that. Bolt that to my spinal column.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be pretty happy.
I want to know from you guys, the people who work with mechanics and technology, how many times is it really operator error? Because that interests me. That really interests me. And you have way more experience in that than I do. So
I've been doing this for about, going on about 12 years, almost 15 years now.
It's, oh my.
9 times out of 10, it's something somebody has done wrong.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Technology fails us on a very, very, very rare scale. People just like to blame the technology because it doesn't have a face.
I do wonder, and I, this is the optimistic side of me. I do wonder if like I had more experience like you do in technology and in mechanics and whatnot, if my opinion would be changed by that. I do wonder. So
it's like a pretty good life. Slap some wires and resistors, and I'd be pretty happy with that.
There's just something about it that feels like you're giving up like a piece of you. Like, I don't know. Like, it's controlled by somebody else. Like, I mean, unless we're so far advanced,
we're all like lambs of slaughter. Anyways, we're controlled by someone.
Because then I think about Terminator. I think about Terminator, and I think about Aliens, and I think about how the robot betrayed the ship in Alien. I'm not going to lie, guys. I know Aliens better than I know Alien. I know it's bad, but don't come for me.
That's just anti-tech propaganda is all that is.
Is that really?
I won't stand for it.
Don't harm my people, Ty says.
No. Consume and assimilate.
Don't harm my bots. Not my people. Don't harm my bots. That is absolutely insane and crazy. And I really hope that when nanotechnology comes about, that I will be dead and gone for a long time.
Well, nanotechnology, I mean, it's not like a thing. I mean, it's used in everything. There's nanotechnology. It's used basically in everything. I'm sure our phones contain nanotechnology, computers. I mean, everything.
Well, I can't hope for that anymore.
These things we're wearing on our heads, where things we're talking into, there's probably nanotechnology in those.
I don't like this anymore. This will probably be my last podcast appearance. So I'm sorry, guys. Nope, that's crazy. I'm going to have a lot of nightmares now. I'm literally going to start looking at just tech in the house and just go, okay, I know it's smarter than I am, and it's weird, and there's things. I'm going to start questioning the tech in my house now anyway. But that was really good, Ty. Ty, that was awesome. Good.
I'm glad you guys liked that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. But yeah, that's a gray goo. It's a fun read if you guys want to look into more nanotechnology stuff. There's a lot more history than nanotech. I just didn't want to go too deep into it. It was a lot. But it's an interesting field. So by all means, check it out if you haven't. It's pretty interesting stuff. But that does it for me, though.
That's awesome. I really, really, really enjoyed that. I'm going to have a lot more to be scared about now.
Don't fear it.
Don't fear it. Just embrace it. No, just embrace do it. Okay. Well, now since we're talking about technology, where all can they find us at Cult Talk Net?
They can find us at Cult Talk Net on everything. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, everything. Anywhere you go, look up at Cult Talk Net and you'll find us there. We made it nice and simple and easy. What are we doing next here on Cult Talk Conspiracy, Bailey?
Next, we are going to be looking at the mystery of John Dillinger.
Ooh.
I'm excited.
Don't know a lot about John Dillinger, so I'm excited to hear this.
It's not really a whodunit, but more of a what happened. I quite like it. And
a little murder mystery.
Yeah. I'm very excited for it. We're going to talk about a very interesting lady as well. Nice. So I'm very excited.
So we'll be back here, of course, in 2 weeks for
yes.
that.
Yes.
Bailey number file 015. But yeah, that was file 014, Gray Goo in the books. Make sure you guys follow us at Cult Talk Net everywhere. Make sure you check out Cult of Campbell on Mondays, our Bruce Campbell themed podcast. Check out Cult of Lore. That's the first and third Thursday or Friday of every month. And they also do a really cool video podcast on youtube.com/culttalknet. So check that out. It's a little added visual experience and it's pretty cool. So check that out, and also on all the pod feeds. Cult Talk Conspiracy. We're here every other Tuesday with new weird stories, so you can question everything, as we say. But until then, I've been Ty.
I've been Bailey.
Question everything.